Hello and welcome to Susie Explores, a podcast with me, Susie Collier. Today, my guest is the wonderful and beautiful singer, composer, teacher, enabler and mother, Becca Stevens. In our conversation, we talk a lot about time, making lists, motherhood and Becca's special friendship with David Crosby. We recorded this podcast just before Becca gave birth to her second daughter.
I'm making an album. The singles start releasing right when my maternity leave is over. So I'm trying to get as many of those ducks in the row as I can before everything goes into, you know, the blur of maternity leave.
So I want to know what it feels like to you knowing that you have your lovely list. It was lovely to see the list on there. And a list is a good thing because you can cross things off, or you can throw it away, or you can start again and wipe it clean. But are you feeling that kind of energy that just says, yep, I need to sort this and I'm going to be able to do it? Or do you feel like you're letting go of things in readiness?
Both. It waxes and wanes. There are periods where, you know, I want nothing more than to just lay down and fall asleep. And because I feel that I'm doing a very important job internally, I'll give myself the luxury of that, especially now, more so in the third trimester when sleep is hard to come by at night. But in the last week, I've had a surge of energy, of focus during the day where I've managed to get a lot done. I have marked off the last thing on the labor prep list, like it's called my little sister labor prep list. So that's all that stuff is ready. We're planning to have her at home. So there was a lot to get together to do that. And then also, you know, packing a hospital bag in case we end up there and getting her clothes washed and like having her sort of set up in her sister's room and like just a lot to get together. But then with work stuff, for a while I felt that, and career related work stuff, for a while I felt that the email and admin world for me was manageable, but the like big brain stuff, recording or editing, mixing, things like that, that really take a lot of your brain and energy, I just couldn't get to it. There was, you know, like a few weeks where I couldn't make my brain go there. But in the last week or two, I've had this surge of focus and I've managed to go pretty deep. So that's been a relief.
I think it's always a relief when we can truly go deep. Because I think to sink into that water and to be deep is kind of where we want to be. And I think to just be looking at it from the outside is not always the easiest thing. I think it's interesting because you said, I couldn't make my brain go there. And I think that it doesn't matter whether you're cooking and ready to burst or whether you're just existing from day to day. I think this is a really interesting one. Because what did you do when your brain couldn't go there? Did you just say, oh, shucks, you know, I'm just going to have a real gentle one? Or did you try and see whether you could chivvy it along a bit?
Again, it depends on the day and how nice I'm being to myself. You know, some days I would really get down about it and kind of beat myself up. And then I'd have to switch over to the other side of my brain and be like, hey, you're making a human. Chill out. And, you know, some days I would say, I'd take a step back and go, it's not the end of the world if this doesn't get done right now at all. Like I have time and there's always time. And just because she's coming doesn't mean that the world is going to stop when she's here. You know, there's still time to put on a pair of headphones and listen to mixes of this music that I recorded. You know, maybe it actually could end up being a really cool combination of feelings to be out of this chapter and in that chapter, but listening to something that I did from before, you know.
Which, two different worlds, two completely different worlds.
Yeah.
You said there is always time, and you were talking about it depends, you know, how nice I'm being to myself as well, which I really, really love, because I don't think I tell myself that all the time. I don't think I say, oh, you've got a thousand things on your list and there is always time. I think when I look at that list, I just think there isn't time and yikes, what am I going to do? But yeah. I think it totally depends on how nice I am being to myself. So look at all this stuff that you're saying when you're really fit to burst. And actually, these are really important things for life.
Yeah. And I mean, it's all stretchy and relative. I think sometimes that the...
stretchy and relative. Oh, come on. That's so beautiful.
Sometimes we create less time by the constrictions that we put on ourselves and on our mind in those moments where we're like, it's all or nothing. I either have to mark everything off this list or not. And then you kind of shut down the process. So compartmentalization is our best friends in those moments. And also like prioritizing, in my team, we have, with my manager and personal assistant, we have a heat map. And the things that really, really need to get done today are red. And then as it gets less and less of a priority, it goes orange down to, you know, blue or whatever. I can't even think of what's at the bottom because it seems like everything is medium priority or higher.
Well, the first thing is when it all comes out the same color that perhaps it's not really very good.
Yeah, the house is on fire.
Because the house is on fire or mm-hmm. I'm so cold, all I'm seeing is blue. I mean, that's never going to happen with a list. But I love the idea that in theory, you've got a whole lot of colors in there and it gives you something to play with every single day. But the kind of shutting down the process is exactly the antithesis of what you've made the most of in the last few days, which is this surge of focus. Mm. So you've got this surge of focus and then suddenly you're doing it and you're being it. But before then, you couldn't do the big brain stuff. So surely you could say, oh, well, come on, that's babe to be. It's all to do with babe to be. It wouldn't normally be like that. But surely this happens all the time. The big brain stuff. Yeah, to everyone. The big brain stuff and the surge of focus and then the inability seemingly to be able to think straight. You say that everything is stretchy and relative, but we need to kind of prioritize. But I think when I'm pressurized, I can't prioritize at all. It's impossible. Yeah. Everything is really big on my list. Every single thing is really big on my list. And I think it's a tough thing. So look at you. You seem to be able to do that.
Well, today I can. Again, stretchy and relative. And also like within that relativity, like I could agree with you and say, when it's all thrown at me and needs to get done all at once, it shuts down the process and doesn't incentivize me. But what does incentivize me is a deadline, like a real deadline. You know, that kind of pressure creates inspiration, you know, for writing music, which I can always put off. It's the thing I love to do the most, and I can always put it for last. I don't know why that is. Actually, I could talk about why that is because I teach about it. But when it happens to me, somehow I get amnesia and can't remember what the heck is going on. But yeah, the it seems to be that my tendency is to put off the biggest, most important things until there's a looming deadline. And then I go, oh, what have I done? And then step it up. And that's also kind of, I think, what is happening right now. It's not like inspiration and focus is coming out of nowhere. Like I could still avoid it just as easily. It's that the calendar says I'm 39 weeks. This baby's coming. I know that I'm going to be better off if I've gotten hold on some of these big things. And I know that I've been distracting myself with admin email stuff that can wait. It's like if somebody hears from you 24 hours later versus 1 week later, it's not the end of the world. And I'm not supposed to, like, it shouldn't be coming from me. So why am I controlling everyone's lives? It's like, I think I had a little wake up call where I was like, I'm trying to control this period leading up to when somewhere in my mind, I feel like life is going to come unraveled. And so I'm trying to control everything. And I had to just let it go.
But do you think that you have got the ability to let go of that control because you've kind of been here before with Willamette. So you know, you know what it feels like just before you pop. You kind of been there. So I wonder whether you have the ability to actually look at yourself and say, oh, come on, I can see this now. We've done this before. We're trying to control this thing. But we know that when this happens, and it will happen, this is what's going to go on.
I was writing, I have an email address for Willamette, and I write her letters from time to time that she can read. I don't know. I picture her reading them like teens or later, early 20s or something. And I was writing her and talking about this feeling of like, so much is unknown in this transitional period. But what I do know for sure, because of her, because she taught me this, is that I love being a mother. And it suits me. And I wouldn't have been so sure about that before her, because how can you know? And so I know that that piece is taken care of, so I don't have any anxiety there. But you know, three times over, as well as I do, that each time you add a human being into the mix, there's so much unknown and so much potential for stressful change, you know, like things that work aside, there's going to be, she's really excited to be a big sister, as excited as a 2-year-old can be. But there's so much that she that she doesn't like, isn't aware of, that's going to be challenging for her. And so that part is on my mind. And then, but as far as like specifically your question coming out of the discussion about work, I think that, I feel like this has been my answer to everything, but I'm of two minds about that. The last time I did this, it was still pretty pandemic-y. It was like very early 2022 when I was about to have her. And now things are a bit different. So there's more going on. So I feel like I have more responsibility when the maternity leave ends, and I have more to get together heading into the transition. But I also agree with you that having done it before, I can definitely control less. I think I made more lists than I needed to last time.
Oh, lists can be really, they can be lovely things. I find them very comforting, as well as horrendous in every way. So I really get that. You're right. So Willamette arrives, and it's post-pandemic, which means that, yes, maybe we're not so worried about seeing folks and inviting folks to dinner just before you pop. That's great, and that's why I came over, and it felt fine. We weren't worried about anything. Mm-hmm. But you're right, because there had been nothing before.
Yeah, there had been like another surge in 21 that I remember, I mean, the Grammys, for example, were
that's true, yes.
Yeah, we're just online. I can't remember if I was pregnant yet, but that was early 21, right? Jacob went there, but the majority of it was online, and so I was nominated that year, and I was, you know, watching it on Zoom. And there were a couple pockets like that in 21 where it would sort of surge and things were just slow. And so we were home a lot. Like things were really slow during that pregnancy at home. Things were sort of slowly picking back up. And there was a lot of time to go inward and, you know, kind of woo, like being in touch with the pregnancy and having time for meditation and breath work, you know, none of which has happened this time, because there's already a human being here outside of me that takes my focus whenever I'm with her, you know.
It's really true. So one sense, you were able to luxuriate in the fact that things were slower. But then we come back to the lovely expression that you've coined today, the stretch in relative. Well, it kind of stretched to fit that particular time of life, which we never really want to have again. And yet it sounds as though it was pretty precious for you. I do think it's incredible that you did not need to navigate change in the way that you are going to now, because you have got a little girl who is waiting and imagines what life might be like, but also life is different right now. So we have seen each other over a number of years, and obviously the biggest time was seeing each other in New York for that supper and my first ever ginger shot and all the other adventures. But I kind of wonder how good you are at navigating change. I mean, that was such a pivotal conversation. That really was. Mm. That was really just not knowing what the future held at all. Mm. And talking about wants and loves and needs and not knowing whether any of these things were going to be met. So it was quite a special conversation.
And I have to know, are you referring to our dinner at that restaurant where you rode a horse to get there, or yes, the one where you came to? You are.
Yes.
I wasn't sure if you meant when you came to our house in Brooklyn just before Linnea came.
No.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
You can't just say the horse, because people are going to think that perhaps I get on a mule on a regular basis.
It was the most valiant effort that anyone has ever made in New York to get to a dinner reservation in, was it pouring rain?
It was so pouring that you couldn't even see the street names.
Oh,
and I did have a flight that I had to catch. So we only had a certain amount of time. So it is true, I went in this kind of horse tuk-tuk.
Yeah, it was a buggy.
And this particular person demanded a huge amount of money. Otherwise, I was not going to be released from that particular situation. So I will never forget it. And we did laugh a lot, but I almost cried. But I got there, and then you said that what I needed was a large ginger shot, which was a big shock to the system and wonderful. And it's that conversation I'm really thinking about, because it goes back from the huge changes that have happened in your life in the last 3 years, and it goes back to a different era. So I wonder, really honestly, there's you now and there's you then and there's you in many years before when I didn't know you at all. What are you like navigating change? And actually, I'd love to know how Nate is with navigating change, because there's the two of you together.
That's such a beautiful question for me right now. It's something that I've both drawn a lot of inspiration from lately and also struggled with. So it's multifaceted and deep. But that was probably, I mean, I could look in my calendar, but it was probably 2019 or something.
Before things were terrible, yes.
Yeah. Things were really exciting then, leading into, you know, I spent a year making this record, Wonder Bloom, and I was, part of the reason why it took so long is that I was touring constantly.
Yes.
You know, Nate and I barely ever saw each other. And we both had this dream of being parents one day, but there was just never time to kind of take it seriously. It was like, okay, well, that'll be there, you know. And there was so much touring in his world with the Ataka Quartet.
Totally.
And in my world with my band and other collaborations, Lighthouse Band with David Crosby and all kinds of things. And then when I wasn't touring, I was working on this album in studios all over the place, all over New York and the country. And even we did some sessions in France. And I don't know, it was just like, it was endless. And things were really exciting, but things were very much not sustainable. The way I remember having that thought, like shortly before everything shut down, I was like, this is not sustainable. What's going to happen? You know, and then I ended up not really having to figure it out because the world did it for me. But, you know, I'm sure you've talked to Jacob a lot about this, but the touring model can be just like absolutely devastatingly brutal sometimes. And I wasn't touring with a tour bus with my own music. I did with David. And anytime we were opening for Snarky Puppy or something like that, we would be on a tour bus. But otherwise, I was doing the like flight at go to the airport at 4 a.m, flight at 6, sometimes straight to sound check up till 2 and do it all over again. It's just, it's really hard on the body. It's really hard on the mental health and all that good stuff. And I was just having a hard time like seeing even though I so badly wanted to have a family and be a mother, I was having a hard time seeing a pathway out of that partly because of how booked up I was, and then also because there aren't many examples of it.
No.
I've got you. You know, you are a hardworking mama of three. I've got my dear friend Gretchen.
Yeah.
Parlato, and a handful of other people. But when I was in my 20s, I'm 39 now.
Yeah.
I have to think about that. When I was in my 20s, I was looking around all the time to see how it was possible to do both things. And I only saw it with men. And I don't think it has to be gendered, but it just was what I saw at that time. It was like a colleague, you know, jazz musician or whatever, would become a father and go back out on the road. And it seemed like a blip in the radar, whereas the female colleagues would have a child and drop off for 10 years or something, or forever. And so that was really scary to me, because career and music, especially creating music and writing music, is so important to me. Mm. It's so important to who I am. And I think that having that fulfillment makes us a better partner. It makes us a better mother. It makes us a better person, you know, because you're happy. So I remember that came up in our delightful meal. It was like I remember being by CB2, and I can't remember what the name of the place was, but it was like vegan or plant-based or something. I can't remember
where
we were.
It was really lovely, but you're right. We were there. Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, this came up, and that conversation was a game changer. I remember leaving and I had tears in my eyes, and I like left a message for Nate and Jacob, and I was just like, your mother just woke me up. It was like, I mean, the gist of it was that you told me it could be done, and you told me that it would work itself out in exactly the way that it was supposed to. And, but you had this, I mean, it was like an hour long conversation, and you had this way of kind of unpacking it that I was like, you did it for my brain in a way that I had never heard it before. I wonder if you remember some of the things that you imparted to me that day, because I've been blabbing.
I remember much more the feel of that time. I know that quite possibly it's the most important conversation that we have ever had, and maybe it will be the most crucial one that we will ever have. And I remember that not because I can remember important things that I will have imparted. I feel that you let me in and you were really honest. And I think that when any of us are really honest, we can acknowledge what is fully going on, and then we can look at it for real. And I think it's very helpful to be able to do that with another human being. But we were so excited to see each other. There was a real kind of, we want to make this work. And I think we were both ready for that conversation. Mm-hmm. And I really think that when we respond to questions, if we are responding in a way that, again, is absolutely genuine and it's got no agenda, I don't want to have a mention or a part to play that's really major in your life or whatever it happens to be, then it's okay and everything can flow properly. But I do remember the idea of non-sustainability, not being able to sustain a lifestyle. And rather than exploding that thought, I think we sat with it. And I think that all the things that you've raised today and that we raised on that evening were true and real and necessary to be able to really look at it in the face and not be frightened. Because I think fear is the biggest ingredient here. So if we think that something is not sustainable, I think there's a lot of, I can feel it in my stomach. It sort of feels fluttery. And I know that I can't do it. And it becomes a fear-based thing.
That point that we brought up about time being stretchy and relative, I think, came into play that day too, because you were talking about how, you know, your world splits. What you thought before was everything becomes only half or less. Your world breaks open, and then your priorities change, And with the change of priorities comes a new structuring of what the things are from that first world that are important enough to carry forward. And a lot of stuff that drops out wasn't even important to you in the first place, and you just didn't realize it. And then the stretchy part is that you end up making time in areas that you didn't know you were wasting time. So much time was wasted. You realize, like, after that, after it breaks open, you learn how to use your time better, but also that there is time in places where you didn't notice it before. And a perfect example is this. If you take the last two albums I've made and put them side by side, Wonder Bloom, which is the pandemic record that came out in March 2020. And then this one that I just made, which is so much drawing from the experiences of the last few years, motherhood, losing a mother, becoming a mother again. It is like infinitely simpler the way that I went about it. And it doesn't make it any, I don't know this for sure yet, but to my instinct, it doesn't make it any more or less powerful. Or maybe it actually, well, the jury's out, but maybe it makes it more powerful because less is covered up by overextending and over obsessing. I guess we'll see. But no, I don't think anything's lost by the simplification of the process.
I don't think anything is lost. I just simply think it's different. And I think to look back on, and we could go back on each of your albums and I could say, what was the overriding feeling of each one? It'd be quite interesting to see what you say, because if you say that one was over-obsessing, I'd say that gave that album a particular kind of energy that I feel I can relate to, I feel I can carry, and I feel that I can enjoy. And actually, I think I can let go with on that album because of the type of energy that you did put into it. So, of course, the jury is out as to how this next album is going to be received. But the simplicity, in a sense, and the looking back over recent years in a very, very, very kind of time conscious way will just mean that we're going to receive it in a different kind of a way. Who knows why something is resonant for one person rather than another? I've got no idea. But if you've given it in the best way that you can and in the only way that you can, then it's going to be fantastic. It's going to be the best version of you at that particular moment. But the over-obsessive album, my goodness, it was just wonderful. Simply wonderful.
Yeah, I like that. I like that that take on it. It's not better or worse. It's just different. I do feel that way about art. You look back at like the first songs you've ever written, and it's hard for me to 20 years later to put myself above that. It was just the expression of who that person was at that time. You
but
know?
Then if we take you right back to, well, I guess the 2008 album, those years ago, I wonder whether you feel that it's a dear thing that you can just hold in your arms and just say
absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't. I have no desire to change it because it's a different person. It's like that was mini Becca. I want to like high five her and be like, wow, you did that. Good for you. And there's some stuff on there that I feel like I would have a hard time accessing now because of the knowledge that I've gained and the experiences that I've had. Sometimes it's harder to get back to that completely like open muse mind kind of writing. It's all on a spectrum. Like no student that I've ever worked with gets to a point in that spectrum where they're like, oh, I have the perfect amount of inhibition and pedagogy. I found the perfect balance of knowledge and freedom. It's just, it doesn't exist. It's a constant search. Like, it's this lifelong odyssey.
It's a lifelong odyssey, but surely if we're not trying to get the perfect balance, we've got much more likelihood of getting it in the first place. So there's all the striving in there. But I also think that it's a fascinating concept to be lucky enough to have a history of you in musical in a musical way. So it's all there. It's a kind of a chronology of the things you decided to give to the world. Or you gifted to the world all these things. So we go back to Small Becker in those days. That album was so important to us in ways that I can't even begin to express. Really, really super important. And that's way before you ever met Jacob. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're right. You'd experienced what you had experienced. You were looking at things perhaps in a very, very fresh-eyed way. And you could only do what you could only do at that time. And you can only do what you're doing right now at this time. And I think you're going to look back at being 39 weeks and 39 years of age. And and you're going to think, gosh, that seems a long time ago. And look what's happened and look how I have experienced kind of inhibition and anger and knowledge and experience and sadness and all these things. And I wonder what fellow musicians say to you. So my friends, I remember when I had Jacob, they said, well, are you really worried because there's not a lot of time to practice and perfect your art? And it's just exactly what you were saying. You said, you know, you make most of time. You really do. Yeah. But I think that whether it's your life's journey to have a child or two, or it's your life's journey to bring joy to everybody you meet, or it's your life's journey to get to know one particular person in a very deep way, they are all experiences that are so incredibly, not just life-giving, but life-changing. And that means that your playing or your singing is going to rich up, not dilute.
I feel that way. I feel these types of things give us more meaning and they make those other moments more meaningful. And when I open my mouth to sing, I do feel a difference. I wonder if you relate to this when you play an instrument. The act of creating a human, part of what like breaks you open is that you are from that moment that you meet the human, you're no longer the most important thing in your life, ideally.
That was a nice little word to put in there. I'm so glad you did.
I mean, everybody's different. for me, that was the experience. And so a lot of that self-obsession that happens in art, it gets smaller, you know? And then also I remember feeling like, you know, my voice is coming out of my body, and this body is an amazing thing. This body did an amazing thing, and now I'm singing from that same place, and that was really moving to me. One of the things that I teach, I feel like I need to put air quotes on teach, because I'm often teaching about songwriting, which feels like, I don't know, it feels like more of like a Sherpa thing than a teaching thing, but whatever. I talk about, and this I'm quoting something that David Crosby used to say to me, which is serve the song. And I love this little mantra because it resets that that ego-driven artistic approach of, you know, is so-and-so going to like it? Am I doing this right? Have I always been bad? Will I be bad at this forever? Yep. All this like kind of self-criticism, ego-driven narrative that when you reset with this little mantra or, I don't know, reminder, it takes you back to that muse mind, the open-mindedness that you are just a conduit that is in service to this thing that's bigger than you, much bigger than you. It's something that's connected to everyone, and you're just you, you know? So being in service to that means turning your focus to the art, asking the art the questions instead of asking the ego and saying, what can I do to serve you? What can I do to make this the best that it can be?
You talk about your songwriting courses, but presumably, although you are talking about songwriting, you are talking about some of the biggest, and coming back to the idea of deep, you're talking about some of the deepest concepts any human being can experience. And serve the song. We could change the words of that. Serve the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Serve this time. There are just so many ways of thinking about it that do nothing but good. And I wonder again, just kind of broadening out some of the incredible things that you say, the idea that we can reset, and we really have got that chance to reset every single moment, is huge.
Absolutely. I'm a crappy Buddhist, but there's a lot of like Buddhist speakers that I love to listen to and read their teachings. I'm joking, but also, you know, I'm an inconsistent practicer. I'll say that. But sometimes I'll come across a teaching where I'm like, word for word, this could be about songwriting. This could be about creating or art. You know, these teachings on the monkey mind.
Yes.
And like how similar that is to me when I'm reading. It's sort of interchangeable with the critical mind, even though in mindfulness practice, there's less of an implied negativity.
Yes.
And I think that I'm actually now working on bringing that back to songwriting as well, to remove the negative overtones around the critical mind, because the critical mind is just there to, it thinks it's trying to protect us. It's the same part of the mind that keeps us from walking into traffic or putting your hand on a hot stove. It's like, it thinks that by writing a song and putting your heart into the song and then sharing it with people, it thinks you're going to die.
Yes.
It thinks it's going to kill you. And so it's trying to protect you. And so there's this, this dance that has to happen to make that part of the mind feel useful and safe. And that's like such an important part of the dance. But yeah, it's, you really can, like you said, it's these concepts, like the practice of songwriting is no different than some of these like heaviest concepts it's all interchangeable for sure.
I think it is all interchangeable. Mm-hmm. I love the idea that there's perhaps a part of the mind which you today on this day labeled as being a critical, or the critical mm-hmm. mind needs to feel safe and accepted. And I think that's true of all negative thinking, because if it's really safe for you to express those thoughts, and you can say, oh yeah, okay, I can understand why you're there, and I really can see why you feel that, then it might just feel just happy just to be there and not create a great big noise, like Willamette just wanting to get your attention, and in the end she has to just really, really scream because nothing's happening. It's because it's got to a pitch, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. You're right. And that's another piece that you could make interchangeable too, the analogy of parenthood. Sometimes when I'm trying on the exercise of naming that part of the mind, naming the critical mind or renaming the monkey mind, I'll find myself picturing it as a little toddler that's just doing its best. But it also would totally work as like a grumpy grandfather or something.
Yes.
Like, or maybe you find yourself, it depends on what it's saying, really.
Yeah, I think it does. And I think we can make it into a different person, because we can actually put all these thoughts that we've heard so many different times into characters. And actually, I think that's probably quite helpful. I do think that it is interesting that you said, when you said that perhaps you weren't the best Buddhist in the whole universe, you did say that you were an inconsistent practicer. Uh-huh. And I like that too, because not only I'm sure that is the truth, but I'm thinking what that is in creativity too, or what mm-hmm. that is in even kind of practicing listening to the critical mind without having a big dance with it. Mm-hmm. And that regular practice is actually quite a good thing, but inconsistent practice is maybe that's still better than no practice at all.
Yeah, and sometimes it could be necessary to take that space to float between things. One of the things that I love so much about writing music is that the work is still being done even when you're not sitting down to do it.
That's right.
Yeah. And you, I think you could say the same thing about a lot of music related things, but I'll speak from experience that if I'm writing for 5 minutes a day or 5 minutes every other day, it's still enough to keep it, to keep the song afloat. Because in those hours in between, in the days in between, it's still playing in your head and it's still developing, and you're maybe you jot ideas down on a notebook or record ideas on your phone or whatever. It's when the space between gets too vast,
yes,
that it gets forgotten, literally and figuratively.
Okay. So maybe the idea that you said, which was it's great to have space to float between things, mm-hmm. is very different from having such a vacuum, because you can't mm-hmm. imagine ever being anywhere else other than this space.
Mm-hmm.
So we're back to the balancing.
Mm-hmm.
Which is never perfect, because that's the thing. Mm-hmm. Balance is never perfect. I love the idea. I don't know what made me think of this now, but someone once told me that when you're trying to make a really difficult decision, that the really good thing about that is that you won't carry on feeling that forever, because you're like mm-hmm. a triangle on its point, and that actually it's going to go one way or the other, because it kind of has to. You don't even need to kind of push it anywhere. It will yeah. move. And in fact, perhaps the more you think about it and the more you worry about it, it will stay trying to balance like that in a very uncomfortable way until you let it be one side or the other.
I like that a lot. Yeah, it'll make its mind for you.
Yes, it will.
Do you like Shel Silverstein, the writer? Have you heard
any of his stuff? No, you need to tell me. You need to tell me.
He wrote children's books and poetry, and I was really into his books when I was like in middle school, and I still love them. And he, one of my favorite stories that he wrote was called The Missing Piece, and it's this little Pac-Man guy. You know, the
yes
circle with the
yes, I know.
It's a little Pac-Man guy that yes. rolls around looking for his missing piece. He's looking for a piece that fits into his negative space, which is like, you know, his mouth, like the a triangle slice of pizza. And he goes on these adventures, trying out all these different pieces, and nothing's quite right. And the only thing that is really working for him is that because he has this missing piece, he's able to roll slowly and stop and smell the flowers and have a butterfly land on his head and these kinds of things. And finally, one day he meets a perfect piece that fits perfectly. But then when he starts to roll away, he's rolling too quickly for a butterfly to land on his head or to stop and smell the flowers. And the book, this first book, there's two. The first one ends kind of sad. He lets the piece go and goes back to how his life was before. And then in the sequel, he meets a missing piece, but the piece is also round. And he's like, I don't know how to fit with you. You're already complete. You're not missing anything.
Yes.
And she's kind of like, or he, I don't know what the genders are of these Pac-Men, is kind of like, well, get back to me later. And so he goes on rolling and rounds his edges out so that he no longer needs a piece. And then they can just roll side by side. And I love that. I love that it's teaching little kids that you don't actually have to, you don't have to find the piece that fits in. You just work on yourself and then you can roll with in harmony. You know, it's what it made me think of when you're talking about this triangle that's like on a point that's going to flip one side or the other. Eventually the edges are going to round out and it's just going to make up its own mind. Maybe that was a little too far-fetched, but that's what you made me think
about.
No,
it's perfect. And you've introduced me to something that I really have to get hold of very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of that. And I love the idea of being able to roll in harmony actually mm-hmm. with yourself. Because if we do really understand that everything is here that we need, then we might be able to express ourselves in the song that we want to write, or mm-hmm. play that phrase in a way that's meaningful, or actually just have a meaningful word with the next person we meet going down the street today. I think mm-hmm. I think it's all the same thing. I really, really do. It's only the critical guy and the ego hear me now guy and all these other folks. We're just giving them too much airspace. We talked a lot about space today, which mm-hmm. is interesting. We talked about vacuums and we talked about knowledge and a lack of knowledge and being complete and yet also not realizing that perhaps before Willemier came along, it wasn't a sense that you were not complete at that point Mm-mm. because you absolutely were. And that's why I say that it doesn't really matter what your journey is, whether you will be having a small person come into your life in that kind of way, or whether mm-hmm. you have a relationship with somebody really special or a group of people or a community, it's still the same. You can experience absolutely everything in a really whole way. And I know it's different looking back at those albums, but you were complete mm-hmm. at each of those stages.
I won't argue with that. It's like peeling back the layers of an onion or something.
Mm-hmm.
But the onion there's no end to it. You're just constantly moving deeper and deeper. Some sort of celestial wormhole that never ends.
We are using so many different pictures here. It's very, very muddling, but I cannot resist but say that if we've got an everlasting onion, it means that we've got flavor in all our food forever.
And onions are so spectacular. The longer you cook them, the more like candy they get.
That's right.
I'm not that into raw onions, though. What do you think about raw onions?
I pick them out of salads. Mm-hmm. It's really true. It's probably great at the time, but I don't want to remember it in a particular kind of a way. But slow cooked onions is the most welcoming smell. I know people say bread is, but a slow cooked onion is pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, it's the that smells good. What are you cooking recipe? All you have to do is just put onions in a pan with oil.
And nothing more.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? But then, I think there's something really straightforward about that concept that mm-hmm. maybe when we're just really trying so hard, too hard, to really, I don't know, look nice or appear happy or put on a feast, that it's really okay. To have something really, really simple.
To just throw on some onions.
Yeah. So if I were to say to you right now, with all the different things that we have talked about today, and you were to write lyrics about what we've been talking about, just tell me now how you'd go about it, because actually I've never been on your songwriting course and I'd like to know. We've just experienced a huge amount of different things and we've just scratched the surface. I understand mm-hmm. that. But what would we do in order to release those into lyrics that we could then make into a song?
I'll give you a simple approach that I think is welcome to anyone at any level or any pedagogy. You don't have to be a songwriter. Open up a journal, a blank journal or a blank sheet of paper, and activate the part of your mind that is resistant to criticism, knowing that the criticism will come. But the exercise is, I'm just going to let these words flow on the page to the best of my ability. And set a timer if that speaks to you, or just let it flow for a few minutes, 5, 10, whatever, 3, if that's what you have. And just write. And anytime you find yourself kind of overthinking and being like, what am I doing? Or is this stupid? Just put that aside and keep writing. And in the context of this, I personally might talk about how meaningful this conversation was to look back at these different chapters. I think that might be a theme that would come through for me. I would think about this conversation that we had pre-pandemic, whether it was 18 or 19, I don't remember. And then I would think about these different chapters that sort of like wove me through to where things are now.
Yeah.
And I would think about your trajectory and how you went through something like that too. And now you're so active and inspired, and you inspire so many other people while also doing it in this way that's like rooted in this beautiful maternal energy that like that makes me feel so safe and loved, and you know, just letting the mind like wander through all these different avenues without trying to make it anything. Then when your timer goes off, yes, or when you run out of things to say, go through. I was trying to see if I have a journal handy that I could show you, but I like to then grab a highlighter, or you can just use the same pen you were using and just go through like you're like you've gone to a consignment shop, yes, or something. And you're just touching things that you like and, yep, saying, ooh, this word is cool. I've never used that word in a song before. Ooh, I like this phrase. Could be worked a little bit, but I think I like the idea of it. Or, ooh, I like this concept. You can circle a concept and draw a little arrow and say, this would make a neat chorus or something. At that point, if you're a puzzle freak like me, let me see if I can do this without unplugging my microphone. You could even cut the things out that you underlined,
oh,
and start to move them around on a tabletop or a wall or a floor and start to puzzle together some sort of order. Or just move the things you've underlined onto your computer, type them up, and you can move them around really easily there too. I've done that a lot. At that point, I'll keep going. I'll give you like three more things just to give you a solid start. At that point, you find an order that makes sense to you, read it out loud, and then start to ask it questions. Some really simple questions could be, who is the protagonist here? Who's speaking, or who's functioning? Who's like leading this? Who are they? What is this, or what are they? What kind of person are they? What do they look like? What is their life like? Where are they geographically, spatially? Are they in a room? Are they outside? What season is it? When is it? Is it past, present, or future? What time of day? Who, what, where, when? Why are they doing all of this? Why are they there? What are they feeling? What do they want? Those last two questions, I think, are really, they expose a lot. What is the, and it could be that your protagonist is a rock. It doesn't have to be a person, but whatever that is, like, what does it want? And then you could do like, what are they seeing, tasting, hearing, feeling, whatever. You can go through the senses. There's a lot of, so many questions you can ask. Anytime you're reading through your own text and you have this feeling of like, well, I don't know what this is about, ask it. Ask the song, ask the character how you can serve it best. And then from there, you might start to get a sense of a feeling for the song, which often will start to lead you into music.
I tell you what really excites me personally about that, is the idea that any person in the world can do this and create a piece of art. And maybe it turns into a song. Maybe it stays as being beautiful bits of paper stuck on the wall before our second daughter is born. And then it's still there afterwards. And then what happens to it? Well, all sorts of things can. But I really love the idea that you've touched upon every part of human nature, including everything that is to do with senses, including...
I don't know about every part, but...
Well, I mean, really, I suppose it's more like kind of pointers. So I can just see, I can see the street name just saying, you could just go in this direction. And I think that it's never ending, that this wonderful game, this wonderful task, this wonderful creative thing that you're doing is never ending. And I think it has got the capacity to cover absolutely everything. Look at you. You're so amazing.
No, you are.
Honestly, I do realize that it's about time that you either got on with a most amazing focus to live your day, or that you decide that you don't need to do the things that you plan to do today. You can just let go and just relax on in there. But I can't tell
you. Or maybe have a baby. You never know.
No, please keep me posted on that. Well, I know you will keep me posted. But don't you think it's amazing that we've been able to have this lovely pocket of time? And I know that we're sharing these words with other people, but actually I feel that it's been a very intimate and lovely conversation. I feel so lucky to have been with you today. So thank you so much.
The feeling is so mutual, Susie. I've been looking forward to this, and I love that this conversation got us, I feel like it just got us on the phone with each other.
It did.
To connect. And it's no different than how I feel when you're here. So we have modern technology to thank for that, except we don't get to hug each other, but we'll just have to do an extra hug the next time I see you.
That's going to be a very fine time. Yeah. Thank you for everything.
Thank you so much. This was my pleasure.
Thanks so much for coming on board for this conversation. There are many more I can't wait to share with you. So do click the subscribe button. And if you want to come and find me on Instagram or Patreon. And I definitely hope to see you here really soon. Thanks so much.